Hello and welcome to the Tavern Chat podcast. I am Eric Tenkar. This is another of our designer and makers fireside chats. And today I have corralled none other than Casey Christopherson of Frog Guy Games.
Rick, awesome to be here. Really excited.
Now, those of you at home, Casey and I spent about 10 minutes talking about what we're going to talk about. We're not going to do those five questions that you might know from earlier designers and makers. We're going to dive right in, and we're going to dive into pretty much whatever Casey wants to talk about first. It's a couple of projects you're involved with that are going right now. So Casey, what are we going to talk about first?
Yeah, well, first off, we got 2.5 days left of Tome of Horrors 2020.
That's the new Tome of Horrors. It's for 5e, correct?
It is for 5e, which it's gonna be the first time a lot of these monsters have had 5e stats. We've got some new monsters in there. All the artwork is fresh and new. There's no recycled artwork in there at all.
Okay.
Pretty excited about it. It's gonna be around 250 monsters is what we're shooting for. We've got the layers. I think Matt Finch handed out one that was done by Levi Combs the other day as a teaser. I don't know how many people saw that, but they can go out and find it and get it for free. And I think you may have a link to it on your page for Tenkar's Tavern, if I'm not mistaken.
If not, I'll get one up, that's for sure.
Levi is a fantastic writer. I've known him for about 18 years. He's always been asking me questions and trying to figure out how to get into the business. And I'm just like, do it. Just jump in. And I introduced him to all the right people, or so they tell me. And he's doing fantastic. I'm really proud of him. The Tome 2020, we've got a ton of great monsters, ton of great artists. I mean, we've got DJ Marsh. We've got, Terry Pavlett, Mike Sirigos, Adrian Landeros. If you're familiar with any of our Frog God products of the last year and a half, these are the guys and girls that I've really been going to. I got a kid, Tuan Pham. He's really, really good. This will be not his first publication, because he was published with some black and white art with a Trollord books when he was like 18 years old. He's like 23 now.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's actually an engineering major over at Wichita State University, and he's just doing this. I kind of hit him up, and I'm like, do you still do art? I saw this picture you did for your brother for his birthday. It was pretty good. He's like, yeah, sure, I'll do some art. So I've just been piling work on the guy. So it's really nice to get back to working with him again. He was one of my back around the time that Artem Shukayev was one of my students.
See, folks at home might not realize this, but your official title of Frog Guy Games is like art director or something like that, correct?
Yeah, art director, creative consultant. I'm Zach's punching bag and or hatchet man, whichever way you want to take that.
Nice. Master of many trades, apparently. Okay.
Yeah, I actually got my art and illustration degree from University of Northern Iowa back in 94, 95, somewhere in there. Following that up with an extensive career as a prep chef at a Tex-Mex place in Iowa, I decided I should probably go do a job, get me some health insurance. So I kind of went back and reemphasized in graphic design with the focus on illustration, worked with the great O.C. Johnson Jr., up coming and taking a teaching position here in Wichita, Kansas. I've been here 21 years.
Damn. Oh, you in the end, you went the civil servant route. Oh my God.
It's a funny thing. I was just talking about this the other day, I did a lot of the volunteer work and summer camp stuff while I was in college from like 19 until I graduated, and I enjoyed working with the kids and I worked with a lot of the younger kids, elementary, middle school, whatever. And there was a middle school art teacher named Nanda Gerhardt who her summer gig was oftentimes, especially in the early 80s, going to work at Jim Henson Studios because she knew Frank Oz and Jim Henson from college.
Damn, that's a connection to have.
And so she'd go over to London and like make puppets for stuff like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and things like that for 3 months. And then,
wow.
This lady, she actually called my father at work. He was an engineer for John Deere tractors and says, why isn't your son teaching? You know, and I was really? Probably, I don't know. Yeah. And I was like 25 or 26. I've been graduated a few years. And he goes, you know, I ask that question all the time. And so, yeah, she just kind of laid it on thick to my old man that I needed to go back to school and then finish up my teaching degree. Well, yeah, I need insurance and I want to get married and I'd like to have a real job. So it's either going to be a graphic designer or, you know, a teacher. And it ended up being a teacher. So, yeah.
It's strange how that works out. I mean, I went to college. I wound up getting a degree in history, and I was working retail at a major department store selling electronics at the time. And I thought I wanted to do retail, and I interviewed for a department manager position. And I realized that the offer they gave me paid me less money than I actually made selling electronics. And I realized that retail was not for me.
Yeah, it was. I think after I burned myself however many times making fried taco chips, I was like, yeah. I'm not really enjoying this as much as the waitresses that are making twice as much money as I am a day.
Yeah, it was like, wow, you're going to give me a pay cut in my hourly wage to take on more responsibilities and more hours. And that's when I started taking civil service exams and turned my wonderful degree in history into, in the end, sergeant in the NYPD, which just goes to show you that in some occupations, what your degree in is in doesn't matter much.
Yeah, that's actually pretty true. Not to bemoan education, it is important to get that piece of paper.
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, I first off, I wouldn't have been promotable without it. I would have been stuck as a PO in my career. But not only that, I did get a lot of it out of the experience. I'm not saying that college is for everybody, but I certainly think that if you have the mind to accomplish it, and I did it with the mantra, I'll admit this now, what, 25 years later, of maximum output, minimum input. You know, it's like I knew how much effort I needed to do to pass my classes, and if I didn't care about being magna cum laude as my sister was, I could do it with a lot less effort. So, I got the degree.
Right. But Tone's going to be awesome. One of the things I've been working on is we didn't have as many of the devils in the last. I wanted to address that. So I've added some of those back into it. I'm working one of the like longstanding projects I'm working on is the underworld portion of cosmology with the God universe. I need to get a hold of Anthony Pryor and give him some of my ideas on that. But and then another place to get a little bit of my philosophy on it is going to be an upcoming Humble Bundle, and it's going to launch sometime early December. We love Humble Bundle because what a great cause. You get to give to charity, you get to put some creative work out there. You know, I mean,
yeah, you get eyes on stuff that sometimes would not get eyes on, and right. As a consumer, the deal is amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And my contribution is I take Santa Norvaiside, who's one of the artists that I found, just kind of checked. I was just clicking through ArtStation. So artists out there listening, if you've got cool stuff on ArtStation, I actually go look. And if you'll take the pay that I offer, that the boss pays out, you know, you might have a chance. I'm not saying inundate me with emails. I know you will, but you got an opportunity, you know, because I'm looking for people who can get stuff done, who have a specific look that looks like the people whose work I've named off tonight. You know, people.
And the other thing that people out there probably don't know, but Frank Lloyd Gaines has a reputation for paying on time, if not early. I've heard this from artists. I've heard this from writers and freelancers. And they say it's a rarity in the gaming industry for a company to pay on time, let alone early. Bill Webb pays his people before he pays himself. So just
sometimes within minutes of completion. I've been in a like text messaging with an artist who submitted the work. I looked at it and held it up to Bill, and he said boop boop, and it was in their account before they had a chance to, before I had a chance to reply. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's like instantaneous, and that's the thing, you know. I mean, art pays what it pays, and people who are in the biz know, you know, that like video game people, they pay tons of money, and if you're a kid who can get a video game gig, you know, God bless you, because you are rolling in it right now. In fact, I met a kid who does compositions, you know, that's, they call it all comps. It's all comps, you know, they just want fast slap together images so that they can, show that to the graphics people and the renderers for the video games. And so these, artists who are doing 2D stuff are just basically doing like instantaneous storyboards to. And this was a guy who worked for Rockstar Games, and he's, you know, I mean, he wasn't complaining about his job. Let's put it that way.
I'm sure that's actually, well, you know, everybody has an opportunity to win lotto at some point, I guess, and they're in the right place, right time.
And I was like, hey, you know, pass me on to your boss.
You're too old, Casey. Yeah. You're too old.
Yeah, I could write some side quests for any of the Red Dead games. I've been playing those for years. That's my jam, right? So
nice,
you know, and I spend enough time around people who end up in criminal career fields that I could probably write some good stuff for Grand Theft Auto too.
Nice.
The funny thing is that the Rockstar games, the Grand Theft Auto series and the Red Dead series, have actually been pretty influential on the development of my sandbox style for when I write, just because they put there's a lot of freedom there. You know,
right?
And the bad guys are bad, and sometimes the good guys are bad. But the bad guys are very bad, but they're also very engaging and interesting. You know,
well, they have depth.
Yes,
you know, and that's important. If we're going to talk about that, because if your big bad guys or even your smaller bad guys don't have depth, they don't have meaning, and if they don't have meaning, then what's the point?
I love the complexity, you know, and if there's some complexity to a villain or some complexity to a plot line that's going to get them kind of stopped and thinking, just murder hoboing all the time, you know, and I try to write stuff in such a way that the game master is prepared for the murder hoboing as it occurs, because then I include, well, all of the situational things that are coming next. It's like, well, if they do this, then here's all of these consequence trees that you can follow and then still maintain some semblance of having a game, you know. So but anyways, that's kind of where Feast of the Gobbler, which is on Indiegogo right now, it's our Thanksgiving adventure. It's a kind of partially spoof, partially satire of the Thanksgiving holiday. I originally wrote that about 2019, so I think 2002. And we gave it away free, so I've actually, up until this year, I've never made a penny on that adventure. I've never been paid a penny for the writing of it, not one dime, because we gave it away for free to try and win an Ennie Award, and we got nominated. Did not win, but that's okay, because it was like the previous year, Portable Hole Full of Beer won, and I'm like, well, I can write a And obviously, and then of course they went completely the other direction, and it was some kind of like character record sheet doodah that was supposed to be real hot at the time that you could download and work your guys with. And I was like, well, of course that's going to win best free product. But yeah, man, it was fun. And you know, we've gone back and updated it, and you know, some of the stuff, and it was a little dated, and it was originally written for a 3.0, not 3.5. Right. And I mean, I did almost all of it. I think Chuck went through it and relayed it out because I'm terrible at InDesign. And so that kind of tells you how long Chuck Wright's been with us. I mean, forever. And but I did the interior art for it then, and it was pretty crude for the day because I was kind of doing a throwback black and white art from my first edition days, and it shows. So we've gone back. We've edited it perfectly. We've got it prepared for Pathfinder, Swords and Wizardry, 5th edition. We've got some tie-ins to the Lost Lands. So where you could locate it on the map if you're playing a Lost Lands campaign, which is our default setting. Added some stuff in there that's kind of modernized it because, you know, we have some new trends and things as far as the holidays and Thanksgiving are concerned that have cropped up over the years and become a kind of, we'll just say pumpkin spice.
Oh, and everything nice.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I don't think 18 years ago, 17 years ago, pumpkin spice was as big as it's become. Now it's ubiquitous with the holiday season, right? So I might have sprinkled a little pumpkin spice on the event. It's good fun. I know tons of people who've played it over the years. They've all contacted me and go, man, I play this with my little cousins every year for Thanksgiving. And now my little cousins are in their 20s and they're playing it. You know, the little cousins who were under them, right. You know, and the ones who were in their 30s and whatnot, now they're playing it with their 10, 11, 12 year old kids. And the thing is, it on the surface, it's this goofy spoof of an adventure. You actually read it and get into playing it, it's really hard, and the monsters in it will kill you, and the villains in it are really bad. It was kind of like, I was always a big fan of Temple of the Frog, and I'm like, well, what about like Temple of the Turtle? Located where I grew up in northeastern Iowa, so we've got like, which brings us to another thing. We're all familiar with what is it? Into the Unknown, right? Is that the event? Into the Unknown.
We're talking B1, B2.
Yeah, yeah. And it was the Caverns of Quasquetin, and one of the characters I put in the Feast of the Gobbler adventure was Quasquetin, not because it was an homage to the module, but because I grew up like 25, 30 miles away from a town called Quasquetin.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's where, you know, Counselor's Bluff is from Council Bluffs, Iowa. Some of the other stuff, Green Hill Woods is because we had this place where during the satanic panic of the 80s, all of the devil worshippers in my region supposedly sacrificed babies in the Green Hill Woods, which was over by Green Hill Road, not far from, you know, where I live.
Nice. Out
when you were, you know, stealing beers as a kid or whatever.
Nobody ever stole beers as a kid. No, no, what you're talking about. Remember, I'm somebody who spent my weekends and summers in the Poconos. And
right.
We used to, and you'd find like at 16, when you found a stash of the older kids hidden like 40 feet in the woods underneath some leaves. And there's like, you know, two cases of, I don't know, back then it was probably, it wasn't even Coors Light. It was like Schaefer or
Schaefer.
Oof. Yeah. The one beer to have when you're having nice more than one. Oh, nice. Yeah. And you know, it's like, how, yeah, it's like, do we take the beer? Of course you take some of the beer. You know, how could you not? But then, you know,
it's the devil's tax, man.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Yeah. So that's that was the genesis of that adventure. And I just kind of cranked it out in like 2 days. I'm like, oh, so when's, you know, I found out there was like a 3-week deadline to submit to the Ennies or whatever. So I just kind of threw myself into it and slapped it all together and got it out there. And, you know, now here we are, like I said, 18 years later, and people still play it, love it. And it's like, well, here's an opportunity to finally get it in print. And then, you know, who am I going to get to do a cover for something as goofy as that? Well, I'm going to hire Michael Sirigos, who's one of the best fantasy artists working today and a very good friend of mine. And I'm like, hey, here's this adventure. And I sent him a copy of the old one. And he's like, this is pretty silly. I like it. And I'm like, yeah, man, I want you to go full Conan the Barbarian with the artwork. He's like, I'm on it. Nice. So he really did. He really did. So that's why the cover's crazy. And he's got a couple of interior pieces that are just equally, like, just grim, gruesome, you know, and but also beautiful and fantastic. And then my art skill, of course, after 20-some years of practice is improved from the way it was when I was trying to do the old black and white, you know, OSR style artwork. And so I was able to do some digital paintings to throw in there for some of the critters. And so GoGo page, that's the stuff they're going to see. And yeah, the book, I think they're going to be really happy with it. And it's anyone who's seen the new printed stuff we've been doing through Indiegogo, it is literally super premium modules. The paper quality is like cardstock.
It is really good stuff. As you know, we saw a lot of it. When it comes to Indiegogo stuff, it's pretty much the number that you get of this is what's backed on the Kickstarter and a little bit of an overrun. And the overrun is sold at conventions. And I drool over this stuff because I don't always get a chance to back them all. I'm putting a picture up in the chat from the current Indiegogo. If I can just get this to work. That should be it, I hope, I think. Yes, it is. The Feast of the Goblins. So those in the chat. Wow, there we go. It is up.
Man.
So,
man.
Yeah, that looks.
There it goes.
That looks awesome.
And I did the cover design. I found the fonts and stuff. I wanted something that would kind of, you know, make you think of, you know, Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. And then Chuck laid it all out, and it's looking really nice. He did the cover layout based on, you know, the artwork and what I was doing with the font, and it's going to be really nice. And as soon as we're done with that one, we have another one. So our Swords and Wizardry fans, grab onto your gear, because we've got Bill Sylvie, who's a big OSR guy. I had the opportunity, actually, in the game that I got to play Dungeons and Dragons with Gary Gygax. Bill Sylvie was at the table with us that
really
also did not survive. Though I like to brag because I was the last man standing. So I was in the, it was Gary. We ran a game. Rob Kuntz ran Monsters. Gary ran the adventure. I've never played in a D&D game, anything like it before. And I just, it's that's one of the reasons I miss that man so much, is there's so many people who really missed out on the opportunity to get a chance to sit at the table and game with him, because it is absolutely hilarious. And, yeah.
No, well, my only interactions with Gary were on the forums at N-World, and we got into a conversation, and then I got that, it's, I think it was actually the fall before he passed, I got the open invite to game on his back porch.
I mean,
I was like, just to get the invite was flattering.
Nice. Yeah, but I still have a few emails in that I've saved from there was the big monster exclusion of Hive and all of that stuff, and everybody screamed and fumed at Hasbro like they scream and fume at Disney now. About you know, them protecting their IP, and
right.
You know, I kind of directly asked him, you know, what's the deal with these particular monsters? He's like, well, either I created them or Terry Kuntz created them, and they own them, and that's that. He was very upfront about it, and
wow,
yeah. But he was a good guy. I did not abuse my opportunity.
Nice.
I you know, there was always that opportunity to give him a call and ask him a question, and I chose not to, you know, bother him more than whatever, because you know, I respected that, you know, he's a writer. I'm a writer. When you're sitting down, and I'm an artist, every time you get distracted, that's 20, 30 minutes before you can get focused back into what you're working on, you know? And so it'd be like a rare thing. And, but it was nice, man. And what a great guy. I just said he was a good dude. And he was really encouraging to a lot of us young creators back when we were first starting out, you know? And he would listen to your pitch for your adventure, and he'd give you ideas that would make it better. Plus, he had the puns, which he would really make fun of your stuff. So that was great too. Yeah. So, but yeah, Bill Silvey's adventure coming up will be the first one through the Necromancer Games imprint that goes to Indiegogo. And we'll actually be going back to back with Indiegogo Necromancer Games imprint stuff. First one is Lost Crypt. It's a solid, straight up, straight to OSR, Swords and Wizardry only. Indiegogo got a
really cover by
Hector Rodriguez. It's going to go within a day or two of Feast of the Gobbler close, and we're going to put it right out there because it's done and ready to roll.
Yeah, Feast closes in 4 days, folks. So
yes,
you don't have much time.
Not much time, and so Lost Crypt, like I said, OSR adventure. Bill's got a nice reminisce about his experiences working with Gary in there. That's it's a good read. Like I said, the cover, can't wait. I don't have a copy to show you, but I can't wait until you guys see the cover and the cover design. It's pretty clear. The cover art is by Hector Rodriguez, who did a couple of the one of the interior pieces. And man, Tracy Lesh, he's the guy who drew the very first, back when he was like in middle school, high school, drew the very first Mind Flayer.
Really?
He's friends with Bill Silvey. They like live a couple blocks away from each other and down in the Orlando area. And so he did a really old school throwback art piece that kind of reminds you of stuff that you would have seen from a module that had it come out in like 1979, somewhere in there. So it's got that kind of, you know, that look to it. I mean, it's very, we all know what I'm talking about. That very,
yes,
D&D, you know, basic D&D look to it. In fact, it's pretty fun. It's a big group of adventurers trying to battle out a stone golem, I think. So, I have a couple of my own pieces in there just because we needed some. I'm the filler guy now.
What are you now? The filler now?
I'm also the filler artist. Yeah. Whenever you got like, I'm like, we've got like five monsters at the end of this book and we don't have a picture for any of them. So, okay. Bugbear and giant ant. Yeah. I can do that while I'm at work and show kids how to digital paint at the same time. And yeah, man. And it's fun and it all works out. So, but yeah. And I got to project manage that. We got, Rocky from the Silver Boule is doing a little work on it, and so is Ian McGarty did the map, and it is as old school cool as you can possibly get. He did just a knockout job on that map.
Nice.
Excited. And then literally as soon, that'll go for 2 weeks, and as soon as it is done, boom, sometime like around say 7th or 8th of December, we're going to go up with the Horror Out of Hag's Jaw. And Horror Out of Hag's Jaw is a very Lovecraftian themed adventure by my good friend who I mentioned earlier, Levi Combs. Wow. And again, fill art. But I did a little bit of fill art there. But we also got two pieces of art. We got a cover and an interior piece from a guy named, a Frenchman named Quentin Brouillard. And Quentin is amazing. He's like, his stuff reminds me of Artem's stuff. He's got really good solid colors and really good modeling and texturing for his figure. It looks a lot like the art that people see in Eagle Manor. So yeah, Quentin's really good. He was one of the ones where I think Bad Mike got an email, like an unsolicited email, hey, I'm an art guy and this is what I do and go check out my portfolio. And then of course Mike forwards those to me, and you know, a lot of the times I look at them and unlike a lot of art directors, I know what rejection's like. I do.
Right.
I submitted my work to both, I was so ignorant, I was, you know, probably 24 years old, just met my wife. And I was painting in her old bedroom at her mom and dad's house. That's how awesome my in-laws are. They didn't know me at all. And they're like, oh, sure, long-haired hippie artist guy, come on into our house and go up into our home. You know, just walk right in and go up and paint your pictures. We don't care. Well, I submitted work to Wizards of the Coast and TSR because I had no idea TSR was in being liquefied with paint.
Oh,
we didn't have the internet back then. Okay. And I was, you know, so this would have been, man, what was that, about 95, somewhere in there, 96, 97?
Yeah, all we had back then really was AOL, and that wasn't a great
thing. Yeah, and I mean, I didn't even have, like, computer access at the time. Yeah, talk about ancient ages, yeah. Now I'm looking at, like, three monitors in my face right now. I sent my stuff in, and I got the form rejection letter, you know, but which sucks. And it, when you get it, and I keep finding it and losing it. It's somewhere either here in my office, which somewhere in my home, but I have found it and lost it, or maybe it got burned with a bunch of documents in the last year. I don't know, but I had the form letter, and you get the form letter from Watsy too, because it was, you know, Magic, one of my buddies. He was a big Magic guy, and he's like, well, you should send your stuff out to Wizards. It's at least as good as some of the cards I've got, you know. And he wasn't being insulting. He was just, you know, I was an artist that he knew. I was probably the only artist. Like, yeah, man, it's as good as a few of my cards. So, you know, shit, if these guys got a shot, so do you, right? And so I sent my stuff out, and like within a week, I got rejections from both of them. But Watsy was kind of cool, because they sent you a little kind of pamphlet of, which was kind of like to say, well, this is how your art looks like shit. This is how the art that we want looks. You know? So
had, reteach, like, yourself according to our rules, and maybe you can resubmit.
Yeah, which was at least, you know, I mean, goal setting, right?
True.
So that's fine. Whereas the one from TSR was kind of like, meh, you know, whatever. Anyways, like, so I guess about 2004, I was at a 2004, 2005, I was at TrollCon in Little Rock, Arkansas, because I wrote too much for just Necromancer games. So they're like, man, go sell some of your books to Trollords, because we just can't publish everything you put out, because I used to write a lot faster than I do now. So I did, and you know, they had me out to Little Rock and whatnot, and it was a great experience. And James Ward was one of the guests there, and struck up conversation, made friendship with him, you know, over that weekend and this day. Great guy, one of the best, the oldest of the old crew, as far as I'm concerned. And I was drawing pictures of the adventure that he was running us through. And he looks over, he goes, you know, those are really good. They remind me of, you know, such and such, one of my buddies back in the Dragon Magazine days used to, I can't remember if it was Holloway or one of those guys, but it reminded him of that, you know,
okay,
the expression in my characters and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, I submitted artwork to that magazine while you were the editor in chief of the magazine.
Oh.
and I got the old rejection letter, you know.
The form rejector. We appreciate your interest, but at the moment we don't have a proper venue to use the word.
Jim being Jim, in perfect form, he kind of puts his hand on my... Sadly, I wasn't the art director. I was just the publisher. And he says, and I didn't like the art director. And I couldn't fire the art director, because the art director was the company's owner's cousin.
Oh. Nepotism. And like,
yeah, and then I'm like, ah, and he goes, you know, yeah, he goes, the art director was related to She Who Shall Not Be Named. And I said, and he goes, I'd hire you in a heartbeat, you know? And then it's great, and we've kind of kept up our friendship, and I've just been so unbelievably busy, working on this, that, and the other thing with the Frog Necro, all that kind of stuff, teaching my family. I don't get to work with Jim as much as I'd like, but it was fun when I do get a chance to do a little.
Good. I love the stories of that time frame, of the you know, the post TSR time frame, but before Wizards got their full feet on the ground and really,
right,
you know, going. When they were still selling 2E, but as Wizards of the Coast, at that time frame, that area is always interesting.
In fact, they were licensing Diablo stuff at that time too, weren't they?
They were. Holy crap! I think I have that rule book somewhere.
And I wish I would have picked it up, but I was flat broke as a joke, being a, you know, assistant chef and a line cook.
But look where you are now, Kate.
Look where I am now. I'm pretty blessed. I've been blessed with all of the folks that I've met in the business. I really am. You know, and I mean, I know it sounds like this big name dropping session, but these guys have all been so welcoming and inviting to me, and have set me on a course of a writing career that I really, my friends all told me I was going to have when I was Dungeon Games when I was 16 years old, but it's not something I ever really thought was going to happen, you know, as it has.
No, and listen, when we were 16, 18, if you were a gamer, you probably had the dreams of, I'd like to be able to make a living off of gaming. When I was younger, it was like, I'd like to write comic books, because I knew I could never draw them.
Now I live the harsh reality of the making a living on the role-playing games thing, which is, you maybe.
Few and far between. Can you supplement your income? Most certainly.
Supplement the income, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Can you make income where maybe under other circumstances you might need two people working, and maybe one person plus the RPG income can make it one person working and one person home with the kids? Yes. That I've known people that do that specifically. Because they're successful at RPGs, but not so successful they could just, you know, say goodbye to the standard 9-to-5 job. I mean, I podcast, I blog, I write material, I work the tables for Frog Guy Games. I do this because I am retired with a pension.
And I'm actually staring down I see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's probably a train coming to run me down. But I got about 7 years, 4 months.
You're not counting.
From teaching. No, not counting at all. But, you know, I mean, it goes faster than you think.
It really does. My God, it does. My last 5 years went by in a blink.
Really, I'm like looking at it going, I can retire. And and I can retire, and I can do this, dedicate full time to the to art directing, creating art, creating content, you know.
Well, you know, and that's the beautiful thing too. I mean, there was this whole thing I've always heard, like, well, you better have something to do when you retire, or else you're gonna die early.
I got so much to do. Yeah, the only dying really will be not getting off my butt and going to the gym and just sitting in front of the desk clickety clacking all day long, you know. That's getting out and getting a little exercise and trying to eat a little better is all part of that scheme. It's no fun, but too many of our good young gamer folk and our not very older gamer folk are aspects of our gamer lifestyle, and I'm trying to avoid that getting me.
My cat right now is walking in front of the microphone. Ashley, move your ass. Thank you. Sorry about that.
No worries.
If we were doing this on video, you'd be seeing cat ass almost constantly because she's been walking back and forth and likes to stop where a camera would be.
I locked my two lovelies out. I've got the frisky boy. We brought him in from the cold about 7 years ago, October 30th. And then we've got Miss Lady Sif, who's the reason he came into our house, because he's like, who's this girl? You know, so. And he was an abandoned stray who'd already been fixed. And, but, you know, living in sewer pipes and following high school kids and elementary kids to school every day saying, please take me home and be my mom and dad.
Yeah,
I
think, you know, pets tend to find you.
Yeah.
You know, yep. You know, like my girl is most certainly mine. I inherited Ashley when my son's mother passed, and it's like, oh, I got my 14-year-old son and the matching 1-year-old cat because they're inseparable.
Yeah,
and that was fine. Yeah, you know, because now she's inseparable from me. She is certainly a daddy's cat.
Yeah. Yeah, the only time mine really gets on my nerves is if I have my laptop on my lap and I'm trying to write something, and then he has to with the laptop and thinks I can write underneath his belly, and I didn't have
it. Yeah, well, you can't. I mean, yeah. No, but my, it my, looks like, Yeah, well, my girl will actually, because I have a large L-shaped desk, and I have a little spot for her to my left with her blanket, and she knows that's her spot. But if I'm typing, she'll come over, and she'll patiently wait for about 2 minutes, stare at my hands, and then whack one, and then look me in the eye like, stop that shit.
Stop petting me. There's the problem here.
Yes, yes. That's what it comes down to. But if I pet her, then the dog gets all jealous in the next room.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. We get that. We got the one who's on the diet and the other one who's not. And now the one that's not in order because his little girlfriend's on a diet, he will actually take his food bowl and knock it on the floor so that she gets something extra. When she's
oh, nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've got that going on now. Let's, let me see. What's my last thing to talk about? My last thing to push. We got Tome 2020, 2 days. We got 4 days. Beast of the Gobbler, next thing that I know a lot of people are really curious about, and Matt gives his diplomatic answers, and I give the answers that I can give, which is Swords and Wizardry box set.
See, this is what I've been waiting for ever so patiently.
Yes, Swords and Wizardry box set is going to be awesome for digest-sized books. As they say, it's not going to be new content and material because we have to heave true to the letter of the rules in Swords and Wizardry as they've been published.
And to put it another way, this isn't going to be Pathfinder 2, which is it's not a reboot of the system to make everything prior incompatible. It's a representation of the rules, and it's completely compatible with everything that's been published before and will be published.
It's going to launch a new line of stuff that might have some rules changes different, so some alternate arcana, I guess, but that won't be in this project. However, we got 4 absolutely baller covers by our friend Mike Sirigos, and he nice. Poured a lot of energy into these covers. They're kind of thematic in the way that you remember what we were promised with the Conan the Barbarian, and then what we actually got. You know, we were promised he was going to be the first one was establishing the character. The second one was going to be him, the whole Riddle of Steel thing. The second was going to be him, you know, wandering the lands and you know, breaking chains, whatever he did. And the third one was going to be him seizing the kingdom. Or the second one, he seizes the kingdom. The third one, he tries to rule, right? Well, we've got this kind of cool theme going along. So you've got the first cover has got, you know, like the gathering of the folk, and it looks like kind of a Spartacus kind of uprising where they've overthrown their masters, and now they've got a whole future of adventure ahead of them, right? And then the second one has got this really cool mage standing in all of this, you know, purple flame and whatnot, because the first book is your swords book, right? You know, and the second book is your wizardry book, right? And then so then you got your next book, which is like your treasures and dungeons book, right? So it's got run the game booklet, and so it's got a group of adventurers in like this haunted dungeon trying to pick the lock on a very cursed demonic looking doorway or gate, and then while creatures are encroaching upon them. And then the last cover is going to be the monsters, right? You know, so these are your fearsome foes, but the way the cover is organized, it looks like they're kind of dicing at a table as if the monsters are playing, you know, their own version of the game in some underground subterranean tavern kind of thing. Then, as if that isn't cool enough, we've got a big 4-panel Dungeon Master screen that he did. It is just bananas.
Sorry. I have to ooh, because A, it's going to be a DM screen that can fit into the digest size box, which to me is the ideal size DM screen.
Right.
And as somebody with some inside knowledge of this project, I had no inside knowledge of this piece of the project. So yes.
Yeah. It is absolutely far out. This game has the artwork for it. It's just this big creepy underground dungeon with there's you don't see any creatures and you don't see adventures. You just see like altars and skull gates and Castle Grayskull looking elements and stuff like that. And it's all of that really crazy terrain that he puts into all of his Mofidus Conan type stuff. And so it's like the game master is going to put whatever he puts out on the table. The DM is going to put what they put out on the table, and they're going to put it in front of that screen, and that's your game. You know, that's your world, and you're just, your imagination can wander over the stuff. Now, the interior art, we're doing a kind of a black and white thing, but the black and white thing, it's not really black and white. We're going to do like a tritone, which people jumped my case and they were wrong the last thing about this. That's where you take and you substitute a color for black and a color for gray, so that when they blend together, they'll create like a second or third color. So 1, 2, 3 colors, whatever, and let them be the color mix. And we're going to use colors probably from the various covers and from the Game Master screen, the DM screen, to enhance the artwork that goes into the book. Now, no guarantee that we won't use some of the old work from the first hardback, because I rather liked a couple of those pieces, but I did have about $1,000 to spend on digest size artwork from, again, from Quentin Sobrouillard, who's been doing some of that cool color work that I was talking about. And then Adrian Landeros, who's black and white work is every bit as eye popping and incredible as his color stuff. He did some monsters for me. And then a guy that most of you aren't familiar with yet, named Ed Bickford. And then I've got another guy named Sid Quaid. And Ed and Sid are both illustrators out of Kansas City. And they mostly started out in the comics field, but they're transitioning really heavy into the fantasy. Ed's stuff looks like Frank Thorne, who did a lot of comics, Red Sonja and stuff back in the 80s.
Nice.
And Ed's stuff looks a lot like Frank Thorne's stuff. And the funny thing is, Frank Thorne isn't one of his favorite artists or influences. It's just kind of coincidental how his stuff looks. And then Sid Quaid is, I think, going to be right up there with a lot of the guys that Jeff Talanian uses for Swordsman and Sorcerers of Hyperborea, because he's got that kind of look to his black and white stuff. And he did a lot of color artwork, actually. He did a bunch of monsters for me for Tome 20. But, you guys are going to see Sid's stuff, and you're going to see Ed's stuff, and they're literally forever going to be tied with Swords and Wizardry after that. I know them for Swords and Wizardry for forever.
Nice. So there's much less known products to be associated with. And I really do believe that the relaunch, the box set, is going to be huge.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited. Like I said, I've had a lot of creative input on it. You know, Because I can only ask Uncle Matt so many times for his art notes before I just go, you know what, I got this. My man, I love those guys to death. I really do. I've been, like I said, very blessed to work with the people that I've worked with for the last 18, 19 years. It's been a hoot. I've, I couldn't imagine, you know, growing up in Iowa in kind of the really Rust Belt, Farm Belt town that I grew up in, to get the opportunity to meet the people that I've met and game and have the experiences that I've had, and then be able to just say, you know what, this is the art that I like, and I think if I show it to people, they're going to like it too, and then see that get put into products and watch these kids make some money for the first time ever off of the stuff that they always dreamed about making money doing. How awesome is that?
That is awesome. Believe me, I know. my son was 25. He's 26, and at 25, he's like, you know, I'm 25. I should be able to achieve my dreams. And I'm like, yeah, dude. I just turned 50. I just started to achieve my dreams. So you got a while to go.
Right, right. I had one of my artists. He's really smart. He's brilliant. And he says to me one day, you know, messaging back and forth, and he's like, man, you know, What do you think about having a, like I've peaked in all of this stuff. And, you know, all of these research studies say that as, you know, physicists and mathematicians and your programmers and all of this, all of their, you know, your Bill Gates and whatever, all of those guys had all of their great ideas by the time they were 22 or 21 or whatever. And he's like, I just turned 21. And, you know, it's like, I just feel like it's all over. And I'm like, man, I write my best stuff now. And this was like 2-3 years ago. He says this to me. I write my best stuff at 45. I write better stuff at 45 than I did at 30. You know, I'm a better artist at 45 than I was at 25 when I was trying to submit to the big boys, you know? So yeah, I think you've got time to learn and expand yourself and grow. And I honestly can't wait to see what you do when you're 50 years old compared to now.
You know, when you're a creative, the simple act of doing is improving.
That's right.
If you've been doing for 25 years, you're going to be better than you were at year 25 than you were at year one, just by doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, you know, I had the fortune of, just at one point in time being in a dumb mud style online game, playing one character with Clark Peterson and another character with Bill Webb, and neither one of them, they were both bragging about some cool guy that they met who thought they could use for their company and didn't realize they were both talking about the same guy, you know?
And, go figure.
Yeah, nice. what an amazing opportunity it's been, you know? So I'm just going to be grateful for that as well.
Yeah, you know, so you got to be able to put yourself in the position for those things to happen. If you weren't doing the work, you wouldn't have been in a position where people wanted you to work for them.
Yeah, I think, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think I was ready to try something different. You know, definitely a right place at the right time, and you know, also not being afraid of being catfished on the internet. Easily could have been the case, you know. So,
yes.
Of course, we didn't know what that was at the time either. Because
no, wasn't part of the vernacular.
Well, I'm sure it was happening.
Oh, so. I'm sure it was, and I'm sure it was part of someone's vernacular. It's just that the internet hadn't picked up on it yet.
Right, right. It is the biggest game online. Is thing to be who you're not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
just, but Twitter has pretty much proven that, I think.
Oh, jeez. You know, it's funny because when I was at, Game Hole, just the other week, I had somebody that was in my game, played it because knows me from the podcast and from the blog. And after the game, we walked back to from the hotel where it was one of the conference rooms back to the main exhibit hall, and we were talking, and he's just like, you know, I listen to your podcast, I really enjoy it, think it's really cool, but wow, you're like 10 times more personable in real life than you are on the podcast. And I'm like, that tells you how much the visual aspect is to our communication.
Absolutely,
and the internet absolutely lacks that.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, Casey, you know me. Is our conversation today any different than our conversations that we've had at various conventions, sitting down, having a beer?
Other than I'm swearing a lot less than I normally do.
Well, and I'm swearing a lot less because I'm figuring in the back of my head, Casey may play this for his students at some point, and I better not be dropping the F-bomb. I should be good. My reputation from 20 years in law enforcement in New York City should be left behind, and I should be acting like I should around my niece, where I still drop the F-bomb. But that's
right. Well, you know, there's a good chance that some of my students might listen. There's also a chance that some of my employers might listen. But you know, it's actually been really cool as far as my job is concerned, because I am published and as an author and an illustrator, and I teach a vocational technical skill. I teach illustration and graphic design to students, right. And that when they're good enough and at the proper age or whatever, if they're 18 or their parents, the proper contracts with whoever I happen to think that they're good for, you know, as far as an artist goes. I mean, I might find people who are better for Jeff Talanian than they are for me, you know,
right.
Or I might find people whose work is more what Levi Combs or Skeeter Green are looking for, you know, or might find somebody like, in fact, I think I hooked Twan up with the Silver Boulet, you know, so he'll get a little bit of a side gig with them. And, you know, but, and these are like former students of mine or whatever. And when I have my tech ed meetings and stuff, and, you know, people are like, well, you know, we're graduating four people in auto body, and we're graduating this guy as a firefighter, and this guy went into the forensic sciences and stuff like that. And, you know, I go, well, this kid made $5,000 last year doing artwork. Feel cool. So they're like, you can make money doing art? And I'm like, yeah, and that's part-time because the kid works in a factory the rest of the time. That'd be like,
right,
you know? And so they're like, well, that's cool. And so that's actually a talking point that they use with people with the state, and the people with the state haven't had a problem either. You know, they go, listen, we've got this program and this is what they're doing, and it's a pipeline to a career field. And I had the governor.
Well, if you're doing,
yeah.
Governor of Kansas say what?
It comes in. Yeah. This was about 4 years ago, and I don't want to get into who the governor was at the time, but he wasn't very popular. And he wasn't a very big fan of public education, to say the least. Right. And he came in, and his eyes looked like about the size of golf balls as he's walking through my class looking at what these kids are doing. And he just was like, what's this? And what's this for? And they're like, you know, yeah, I'm doing professional artwork for game design. What? You know, he's like, how old are you? 17. What? You know, and in that same class, there was a girl who she went, you got three or four big art schools up there in New York. Parsons School of Design.
Okay.
I had a girl who was in that same group. She got a full ride scholarship to Parsons.
Wow.
About $500,000.
Definitely.
Done. Yeah, she got the full ride. And so, I mean, you know, it's we were talking about this. It's kind of a, you know, Midwestern thing, I guess. There ain't a whole lot to do here other than, you know, there's people who fall into drugs and alcohol. There's people who, you know, you run from tornadoes. And there's people right. who spend a lot of time in their own headspace, you know, being creatives. Yeah.
Well, you know, the whole thing, too, is when you're creative, when you're drawing or when you're writing, if you're enjoying this, it doesn't feel like work. Even if you're making money off it, you know, you're making $5,000 as an artist in your spare time. Do you think the artist felt like he was actually doing work or anything? He would have been, you know, drawing for himself otherwise, most likely.
And that's exactly what he does. He would have been throwing him in a folder and, you know, chucking him in the back of his, you know, closet or whatever, and, you know, yep. in a box or something. And it's like, now some of that stuff that he's got chucked in a box, if he was to walk into Gamehole Con or, you know, North Texas or whatever and say, hey, here's some original black and white pieces for the newest printing of a Swords and Wizardry. How long do you suppose those would still be in his hand?
Definitely. Oh, I know when I start getting my projects out the door, regardless of Wizardry, if I want to take that step beyond stock art, which is the step I'm at now, I know who to reach out to.
Oh yeah, that's and I got people. I got a guy. If you need a guy,
I got a guy.
I got a girl too. I got a couple girls that are really good. Yeah, yeah. My daughter's her she's got a little 12-page graphic novel she's doing for her AP portfolio, and it's pretty nice. It's funny is what it is, and I can't wait until it actually finally comes out, and she has it all finished up to her satisfaction, because I'm gonna definitely you guys will get to see it in Texas. She'll have it done by then.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe it'll end up being in a Humble Bundle someday. So
and that would be an exclusive, probably.
That would be a Humble Bundle exclusive. Yeah.
Those are always fun. So do we have anything else to talk about before we...
No, unless you have any questions that I'm legally allowed to answer without Matt ringing my phone up.
Casey, I was listening in, and no, you cannot answer that question. Usually, it's not you that gets that, by the way. Usually, it's Bill, who, if you ever step in on one of the frog chats or the tavern chats on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, and Bill Webb is in. Usually, Zach Glazer is also in with the power of the mute button. So when Bill starts talking about things that excite him but can't be revealed yet, you got Zach muting him and then going like 2 minutes later, do you think I can unmute him? Because nobody knows what he's saying right now. So we have to like unmute him.
In fact, speaking of the Zach, he's the one who actually sent me the message.
You see, I told you, I listen, Zach is amazing. And there have been times when, I've gotten the, I think Bill might be in tonight. If I can't make it, I know, take the power of the mute button and be ready to mute when necessary.
I just want to wish me a happy birthday because it's going to be pretty crazy tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. This will go up tonight. So this will go up the night before your birthday. So it's your birthday Eve. It's like being a hobbit.
Yeah, I'm a 40th, 80th, or whatever they call it. Yeah,
40th, 80th.
Yeah, you
damn youngins.
I know. It's good, man. The only downside is tomorrow is our mandatory monthly meetings day. So because the normal monthly mandatory meetings day would have fallen on the election day, and we don't have meetings on election days. So.
No, God forbid. I used to hate mandatory meetings when I was a supervisor on my job, because it was always for the person in charge to talk about how great they are and what they're doing and then tear apart everybody below. Something to look forward
here's
to.
Here's where I hit my mute button so I don't say anything.
No.
I'm pretty happy with my job overall. It's a lot of work. It is a lot of work, but I'm pretty pleased with it.
Listen, my 20 years in law enforcement, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Best job I could have asked for. And even the bad times on my job didn't compare to the bad times when I was working retail. So, yeah. And again, I think everybody complains about mandatory meetings. Probably even the people that have to run them, because they're mandatory. Who the hell wants that?
Right, right. And luckily, I was able to break it up so that I could do, instead of doing the like hour before work, I'm doing like 25 minutes before and 25 minutes after.
After.
Yeah. Because my wife's got a lot going on. She has a meeting for work tomorrow herself, or that's a clever subterfuge for some kind of surprise element.
Oh.
I'm not betting on that one. Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be Taco Tuesday at our favorite Mexican place. Ooh. And letting my daughter drive me home. So,
when my son moved out to Salt Lake City with his job, I was like, man, there goes my designated driver.
It's good times though, man. No, I've had a great time. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
About 4 months, and I'll have even more stuff to share, lies to tell, and a lot more artwork to spread.
You might get grabbed around the time of the to the box set. I might be grabbing all the frogs at that point.
That would be a good time, yeah, to have a good sit down with that one, because I'm really excited about it. Zach's really excited about it. Matt's really excited about it. Bill, when he saw all of the covers and the DM screen and all that stuff, it melted his face off. He's like, man, so good. And it's one of those things where Stefan Pecornori is going to be like, metal.
he's gonna break out the Ozzy.
That'll be Sabbath and Judas Priest, and it's pretty much the artwork is very Sabbath and Judas Priest all the way through. I'm pretty.
Now I'm flashing back to my high school years, and D&D playing, because before we play a game, you had to put on heavy metal for at least 20 minutes to get into the mood.
Right. Yeah, it was a far cry from when I was in elementary, and we'd spend, the half hour watching the D&D cartoon before.
You know, that wouldn't have been a bad idea either, but no, sadly.
Yeah, we started when I was pretty young, so with a kid named Joel and another kid named Chris. We'd go over to Chris's house and watch cartoons, and then they'd make me DM them through killing as many things as they could. And that was Saturdays until about time to go play baseball or basketball or whatever, about noon. We get about three hours in every Saturday.
I believe so. It. Come on. High school and my college years, summertime, man, you played every day if you could.
Yeah. I had to give Joel a shout out. I almost forgot before I get on out of here because, he listened to my last interview and he had to mention one of his characters. And I was like, didn't you play a halfling thief that backstabbed Loathe? He goes, yeah. And then she killed him. I'm like, yeah, but she backstabbed Loathe, man. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Come on. Even character, old school gaming, even a good character death was almost better than a great, you know, win. Who cared about the win? How did you die? You know, well, I died backstabbing loss. I was successful.
Drained into a husk, but I did 33 points damage and she only had 66 hit points.
Yeah, I knocked it down in half, cost my life.
Yeah.
But look at what I did as opposed, you know. Well, I. You know, success isn't as exciting as useful, important, heroic death.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's probably a whole other podcast.
That actually sounds like a good one. Yeah, we should do that sometime. All right, man. Thank you so much. Man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, folks. Now, remember, there's, I'm going to forget the name of the turkey here. Hold on a second. The Feast of the Gobbler on Indiegogo. Gobbler. Tome of Horrors 2020 on Kickstarter. 2020.
Yep.
And the box set coming up in.
We got Lost Crypt for OSR, Swords of Wizardry.
Oh, yeah.
And then we got Levi Cohn's Horror Out of Hag's Jaw, which is a real love letter to D&D HP Lovecraft style.
There you go. See, folks, we're going to keep you busy. Casey, thank you so much. Everybody that's in the room listening, thank you for joining in. And like I said, we'll have the frogs back right around the time of the release of the box set. Maybe do a round table. Oh, you guys will never be organized enough for that shit. But in any case.
We're getting better, man. We're getting better.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, folks. At that level and at this point, we are out of here. Mañana.